mindfulness mode.
Vision is about forward momentum. It's about having something that you're moving toward.
Hey, Mindful Tribe, welcome to the show. Today we're talking about innovation. And we've talked about creativity, we've talked about aspects of innovation before, but today we're talking specifically about the intersection of mindfulness and innovation. And we're here with Dr. Jeff D. Standrich. Dr. Standrich, are you in mindfulness mode today?
I'm in mindfulness mode today and looking forward, Bruce, to the conversation. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. So what does mindfulness mean to you, Dr. Standrich?
You know, for me, mindfulness really means, being present. I mean, just as simply as I can put it, being present, being in the moment, and planning my actions based upon where I am right now and trying to put behind me anything that could get in the way of that, which is usually, past oriented. So it's future facing, it's fast forward, it's present tense is what mindfulness is for me.
Well, you've written this book, An Innovator's Field Guide, and I'm really interested in innovation and creativity. Mm-hmm. And tell me the difference. Is innovation an aspect of creativity?
I really think it is. Innovation is new and creative ways of doing things that either reduce the transaction cost of doing those things or make them much more pleasant, effective, efficient, and what have you. And so innovation requires creativity, but there's also a process. So creativity actually flourishes in the confines of some standards, right? So you think about music, during the Baroque era, which was prior to the classical period of music, there were no real standards. When we created the chromatic scale and we started putting chords together and putting boundaries around music, if you will, it ushered us into the classical period where music just flourished and thousands and thousands of compositions occurred during that period. And so I like to say that creativity channeled is the equivalent of innovation.
Is there more creativity than ever, or is it more difficult than ever to find creativity?
They say that there's no more original thoughts or no more original ideas. I think technology has flourished so much. We have found superb ways of doing things that our forefathers maybe struggled with. And so, I think it's just more difficult to find the opportunity to be creative. We're inundated with noise.
Yes.
At every turn, right? And so that can cloud the issue for us a lot, can cloud our thinking and prevent us from being creative and innovative.
And so how can mindfulness help us to be more innovative?
One of the processes that we walk organizations, entrepreneurs, organization leaders and others through is a process of being very, very focused on what's the problem you're trying to solve or what's the opportunity you're trying to seize. So a problem has past-oriented, pain-oriented language. There's too much of a bad thing, right? Mm-hmm. And an opportunity has present or future tense words and positive-oriented language. There's not enough of a good thing. Too much of a bad thing, not enough of a good thing. And so innovation really revolves around using our thought processes, clearing our minds of our biases, stepping away from the ideas that we have and trying to solve the problem at hand or create a path to seizing the opportunity in front of us. So mindfulness plays a really, really big role there. It really does.
Well, one of the things you say is innovation can win wars and it can fuel profits. Tell me about that.
Well, innovation literally is seeking new and better ways of doing things that we do today. If I like to say that leadership and innovation are inseparable. If you are leading a company or leading an organization or leading in any capacity, and you're not innovating, you're not seeking new and better ways of adding value to those whom you serve, then you won't be leading for long. If you're innovating and you are constantly on the forefront, you're pushing the envelope, you're on the edge of finding new ways to add value to those whom you serve, but you're not leading your people to do the same, then you'll never be able to implement those innovations. And so leadership and innovation are really two sides of a very similar coin.
Dr. Standridge, if you were hired to do a keynote for a company that you researched and you, in your opinion, found out that they were not very innovative, what are some of the strategies that you would take in that keynote address?
Very good. You know, one of the things I would do is, in prepping for that keynote address, I would sit down with the executives and kind of understand where the potential barriers are for innovation and where the potential opportunities are. And I would look for some examples that they have where maybe they have underperformed and would provide some specific ways that they could innovate in that regard. I generally like to talk about innovation involves two or three steps, and there's the identification of the problem, the result, or the opportunity. There's the validation of that problem, result, or opportunity with both quantitative and qualitative information. So quantitative being the credible facts and statistics that lead me to believe there's a problem or an opportunity. And then there's the customer discovery or the stakeholder validation of gathering qualitative feedback to validate those facts and figures and statistics and what have you, that the problem or opportunity is real. Is it real? Can we win? Is it worth the effort? Those are kind of the three real win worth tests that we perform. And then obviously the third step is creating that innovation and implementing it. And so I would probably, in working with those folks in the keynote, talk about those steps, talk about some case studies outside their organization that have used those steps, perhaps case studies where I have consulted with similar companies, and the outcomes of those steps. Of that innovation process. And then I would, from gathering the feedback that I had gotten from some of their senior executives, suggest that maybe these steps would be appropriate in these three areas of their own company to try to get them thinking.
Very good. Yes. Well, your book is called The Innovator's Field Guide, and the subtitle I didn't share, Mindful Tribe, it's this: Accelerators for Entrepreneurs, Innovators, and Change Agents. So I'm really interested in this focus on entrepreneurs. How can entrepreneurs be more innovative in what they do?
You know, I like to tell entrepreneurs, and I work with entrepreneurs and mid-market executives every day. That's what I do for a living through my company, Innovation Junkie. And I like to tell those folks that the law of compensation and service, and compensation can mean company revenue, or it can mean personal compensation for a solopreneur, so to speak. But the law of compensation and service says your compensation is directly proportional to the number of people you serve and the value with which you serve them. Number of people with which you serve and the value with which you serve them. And really being a successful entrepreneur is about looking for ways to add value to your customers, to your clients, to your stakeholders. And that in and of itself requires doing something different than your competitors, positioning yourself differently than your competitors, adding value in different ways, consistently adding value. And that requires to do it well, to do it consistently, and to do it sustainably requires a process. And that process is one that we lay out, that others have laid out as well, is the innovation process.
Dr. Standridge, I know you've written three books, and I'm just interested if you've ever gotten negative feedback in response to the books you've written. I know I always ask a question about the topic of bullying, and I'm wondering if you ever felt bullied as an author.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I would classify it as bullying. When I speak generally about the topics about which I write, obviously, And I receive comments. It's interesting, from a talk that I do, I will receive positive comments, and that say, I really like the way you did this. And then I'll receive negative comments that say, I really don't like the way you did this.
Yes.
I'm a man of faith. And so I'm not faith forward in everything that I do. But I don't shy away from using a passage of scripture or a quote from scripture or what have you to elucidate a point. And I'll hear folks who'll say, I really appreciate the way you shared your faith in that presentation. And then I'll have people say, I really wish you wouldn't share your faith so forwardly in the presentation. Those are a couple of examples. And then I get feedback via email. The way my two field guides are written, the Innovators Field Guide and the Top Performers Field Guide, they are written in short, what I would call vignettes. A title that's kind of a thought-provoking title, usually a quote that unpacks that title a little bit, and then a 3 to 5 minute reading vignette. Think of a mindfulness guide or a devotional book kind of format, followed by 3 or 4 catalysts or accelerators, right? And what I mean by that are thought-provoking questions relative to the reading to help the reader think about their current situation, their present situation, and how they can move themselves or their organizations forward based upon that title, that quote, that reading vignette, and those 3 questions.
Dr. Standridge, how have your books helped you to find people to work with in your business?
It's very interesting. I like to say to my entrepreneurs and innovators and corporate clients is, you know, give someone value before you ever ask for anything in return. So selling should be consulting. I should give them some benefits of my observations, my experience, my advice. If they find that useful, then maybe they want to bring me on board to help them. And so one particular situation, I had spoken at an event, call it 7 years ago. 2 years later, I got a call from a CEO of an organization that said, I've got your slides in front of me and I'm walking through them. And you said something about this, this, and this 2 years ago. Would you mind coming and sitting down with the executive committee of my board? Because we're having some of the same situations. I said, be happy to do that. It was in my local area, less than 50 miles away. So we planned a time. I got in my vehicle. I was driving down there. On the way there, she texted me and said, do you have a bio? The other consultant's bringing a bio. And I said, looked in the back, had a box of books in the back seat. I said, sure, I have a bio. And I walked in. I said, how many do you need? And she said, 10 copies. There'll be 10 people in the meeting. I said, okay, great. Walked in, laid 10 copies of the Innovators Field Guide face down because there was a bio on the back cover. And I said, she asked me if I would bring my bio. So here it is. Went ahead and talked to them through their challenges. They hired me on the spot for a 3-month engagement, continued that for another 3-month engagement, and then a 6-month engagement after that. 2 days after that meeting, I received a call that I didn't recognize on my mobile. It was from a gentleman. He introduced himself, said his wife was on that board. They had been reading my book together at night, and he needed 135 copies, needed me to come speak to his executive team and wanted to hire me to do that. As I neared the end of that first 6-month engagement with that group, a board member who was chair of a health system board down in the southern part of our state said, would you go meet with our CEO? Took him books and he hired me. Then he introduced me to 5 other organizations like his and the association for all of them. And I've been working with each of them now for 3 to 5 years, depending on the organization. So I can point to 5 years worth of consulting work from that moment, that day that I laid those 10 copies down in front of those executive board members.
Wow. That's a great story to illustrate the answer to my question. I appreciate that, Dr. Standridge. Mm-hmm. You suggested the title for this episode, Grit and Grace, A Critical mm-hmm. Balance. Let's talk mm-hmm. about that. Grit and Grace. What is that? Tell us.
Yeah, that moves away from the whole innovation topic a little bit, but it's something that I'm really, really focused on right now. And I'm doing some writing about it right now. You know, post-COVID, there is an extreme degree of burnout, job turnover, people changing their lives, walking away from careers. You know, I serve on the board of a health system, and I consult with a number of health system clients. And also have daughters who are nurses. The degree of burnout and turnover among the healthcare population is at an all-time high, and we blame it on COVID. Yet the facts and statistics about COVID don't match what we're seeing now. Don't match the outcomes. The number of frontline healthcare providers who actually dealt with a COVID patient is a very, very, very small portion of the total number of healthcare workers. And since COVID, the volumes of health system, of acute care health system patients have been down. So the patient volume, the patient censuses, the patient volumes have been down. So we have this situation where burnout is at an all-time high, turnover is at an all-time high, but the factors that are being blamed for leading to that all-time high are lower than they were before. And so you've got these conflicting signals. And so I've really gotten into the concept of, so my doctoral research was in studying successful people and really identifying top performers from average performers. And I've built a career observing that around five continents and building that into my consulting as well. And what I have found is that that really success is driven by a balance of results and relationships, the ability to deliver results while also maintaining relationships. If I ever get out of balance on those things, I lose them both or run the risk of losing them both. If I generate results, but I alienate everyone around me that helps me maintain those results, I lose them both. If I'm only relationship focused, yet people will love me for a while till they lose respect for me because I can't do what I say I'm going to do when I say I'm going to do it. So results and relationships. And I've been talking about that in this context of post-COVID area as grit, results, mental toughness, mental resilience, the ability to bounce back from difficult circumstances and stay the course, and grace, emotional intelligence, the ability to build and maintain relationships. And so I'm seeing this intersection now of the need for both grit and grace and how the pursuit of both of those in balance can change everything.
Well, I'll be very interested in reading the book that comes out of this. This sounds fascinating.
Well,
yeah. Yeah. I want to ask you about aspects of your routines, your life that are based on mindfulness. Like, do you meditate? Do you have some focus in your life that helps you be grounded and just really feel focused?
Yeah. You know, as I mentioned a few moments ago, faith plays a large role in my life. And I taught the same Sunday morning adult class for about 25 years. And to be very honest, that was a bit of a crutch and a process to keep me focused on the things that were important to me. Because I knew that I had, 30 people planning for me to come and lead a discussion on Sunday morning. And generally what I told them is I'm going to come and share with you what I've been studying, researching, and thinking about over the course of the last week and how it's impacted me. And I'm going to let you listen in and we can talk about how it might apply to you. That's kind of the approach that I've taken. And so I lead a Sunday night group that we do that same thing. And so I've built some processes around me that keep me in the scriptures that are important to me. That have a prayerful meditation element around it that is for me as well. When I step outside of just faith-driven processes and just normal day-to-day, I'm an early riser. I usually get up early. I have some coffee. I spend some time without media, just thinking. I have changed my calendar. I call it playing calendar games because people can book meetings on my calendar using a link, similarly to way you and I did with this podcast episode. And I've limited the number of spots that are available because I found that I was so stacked up there wasn't a time for me to practice mindfulness, for me to think, for me to just be, so to speak. And so I've built that into my routine now with my calendar games, so to speak. And then we have a place that's about an hour and a half, hour and 10 minutes north of where we live. We live in a community that's pretty fast paced. This place is very rural. It's on a lake. I have some what I call farmland where I farm for wildlife. And I get some tractor therapy every now and then where I sit on the tractor and, you know, you even with ear pods and music playing, you can't really hear it. So there's nothing to do when you're sitting on a tractor for 3 hours, but be mindful. And I use that as another crutch, so to speak, to force me to be in the moment.
Dr. Standridge, if let's say one of the big universities contacted you and said, mm-hmm. we have been following what you've been writing about, mm-hmm. you know, innovation, this kind of thing, and we would like to hire you to be a professor at our university, how would that make you feel, and how would that change the trajectory of your life or not?
You know, it's very interesting. That actually happened. In it's a state university in the city where I am actually an alumnus. Interesting story, and I don't want to take too long to tell stories, but when I went there as a freshman in the mid 80s, I thought I was going to be a finance major. And I took an introduction to finance and economics, and I made the only D that I'd ever made in my life. And so I went, nope, not going to be a finance major. So I went on and ended up getting a degree in healthcare and then pursuing my doctorate. That took me into the business world, spent 20 years running global operations for a publicly traded company. And then I do what I do now, which is assist entrepreneurs and innovators. I also have a venture fund called Cadran Capital Partners, cadrancapital.com, where my partners and I actually invest and have other investors that we actually invest into startup companies and other operating companies. So I was serving as a guest speaker for the finance professor and on entrepreneurial finance and speaking on innovation for a couple of other professors. And the chairman of the department came to me and said, we think you really need to teach this entrepreneurial finance class because you do it every day. And I said, you do realize that your College of Business is the only course I ever took in your College of Business, I made a D in, and it was in finance, right? And she said, yeah, but you've built a career around innovation and finance and what have you. And, you know, we think you should do that. And so I teach entrepreneurial finance now, at that university. And I also, for several semesters and still some intermittently, I taught a course called Innovation Leadership. And so, at the university level for MBA, for graduate students. And, you know, it was very gratifying. It was very validating for me because the only experience I had ever had in that College of Business was effectively a failure. Mm-hmm. And to be able to go back 35 years later, and to now teach, graduate students, senior upper level undergraduate and graduate students has been transformational to, you know, correcting that past failure, so to speak.
Right. That's a great story. As we move forward in the interview, Dr. Standridge, I want to ask you 5 quick answer questions. So just 30-second answers are perfect. The first one is this. Who has been one person who has been a powerful mindfulness influence in your life?
You know, I have to say, it's not a person. It's a practice, and it's been my faith. Mm-hmm. And the prophets, you know, the wisdom of Solomon from the Proverbs, probably I would have to put at the top of the list there, but the prophets, the authors of the gospel. And so that would be number one.
How has mindfulness affected your emotions, and how have you been able to deal differently with your emotions as a result of mindfulness?
Yeah, great question. You know, me being mindful of this balance between results and relationships now, which I refer to grit and grace, me being mindful of that and me reading the works of Daniel Goleman, probably, and just the emotional intelligence focus and understanding that a key element of emotional intelligence is understanding your emotions, number one, recognizing, validating them, but then also controlling them and managing them. And, And so, you know, I would say that that aspect has really affected me, you know, being knowledgeable first, but then being mindful of that knowledge second and figuring out ways to put it into practice.
Let's talk about breathing. Do you have any comments, any thoughts about breathing and how that mindful practice can make a difference?
When I arise in the morning and before I go to bed at night, actually, I engage, and I would say 80% of the time, you know, I'm probably not 100%er, but call me a 75-80% of the time, try to center myself with some, you know, just standard breathing exercises, nothing out of the ordinary, to slow my heart rate, clear my mind, so to speak, and prepare me for the day or prepare me for a good night of rest.
Right. Is there a book that you would recommend that's related to mindfulness?
You know, Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now. You know, it's it really elucidates the concept of mindfulness very, very well for me, but then also provides some of those practical examples for how to be mindful.
Sure. Are there any apps that you would recommend?
You know, they're not. And the reason is because I think it's so easy to depend on technology. I'm not against it, but in my own life, I know that it can become an unhelpful crutch if I'm not careful, and it's easy for me to get distracted. So I usually try to practice the mindfulness techniques absent technology, and that's just my own thing.
Sure. Okay. Well, as we wrap up the interview, Dr. Standridge, I'm just wondering if you have any final words of advice for our Mindful Tribe listeners.
You know, I do. And I would say one passage of scripture is, you know, that's from the Proverbs is, without vision, the people perish. Another translation of that is, without vision, the people cast off restraint. So without vision, the people perish. Without vision, the people cast off restraint. So think about that word, cast off restraint. Here in the South where I live, the euphemism for someone who casts off constraint is someone who runs around like a chicken with their head cut off. And so if you think about that vision for a moment, that example of a chicken running around with its head chopped off, that's exactly what they do. And there's no restraint whatsoever. And, you know, vision is about forward momentum. It's about having something that you're moving toward versus something that you're moving from. And that passage of scripture is very poignant to me, saying that if we don't have something that we're moving toward, then it's like we're running around like a chicken with our head cut off. And so the other example I use of that is, be the river, not the swamp. A river channels its energy and literally cuts through obstacles to continue its forward momentum, where a swamp just kind of spreads out and, you know, sometimes gets green slimy stuff on top because it's stagnant.
Yeah, I really like that image. Really like that. Be a river, not a swamp. Dr. Standridge, thank you so much for being a guest on Mindfulness Mode.
Hey, I appreciate the opportunity, Bruce. It's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed listening to some of your episodes, and look forward to interacting with your listeners. They can reach out to me at innovationjunkie.com or jeffstandards.com, or I'm very active on LinkedIn as well. Love to connect with your listeners.
Awesome. You have a great rest of your day, Dr. Standridge.
You do the same. Take care, and thanks again.
Thanks. Bye now.
Hey, Mindful Tribe, thanks for joining us today. And thank you if you've already gone to Apple Podcasts and left a review, left a good rating. We always appreciate that. And if you haven't, please hop on over there to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. You can do it on Spotify if that's where you listen. And with that, take what we've learned today to reach new heights of calm, focus, and happiness. Stay in the mode.